Session number 16696.
Mr. Briggs, Realtor. I was just asking you about the state of morale of the men in your team, the frogmen in your team, in April 1944, please.
I thought the morale was very good. At least the morale, in my opinion, was very good. I mean, I didn't have any people that overstayed leave. I didn't have anyone that was particularly sort of bad when they went out at night, or what we used to call ashore at night, the usual odd drinker, but there wasn't any drunks, there wasn't any problems with that at all. Morale was very good. We acted as a team, we lived together as a team, and we were a team, and we stayed throughout our operational units as a team.
Did you have a right-hand man, or was there such a thing?
I had two corporals. Sorry, I rephrased that. One corporal and one lance corporal. They were very good, yes. Very good indeed.
Do you remember their names? Doesn't matter if you
Yeah,
can.
yes. One name was Stevenson, Corporal Stevenson. Who in actual fact was a bit of a non-swimmer, really. He could swim, but we trained him to swim underwater better than he could swim on the surface of the water. So he was my right-hand man, Corporal Stevenson. Then I had a lance corporal. Can't remember his name. It's in there, by the way.
There, you're referring to a book called The Frogmen.
I
I might
am.
as well quote it now. It's called The Frogmen, The Story of the Wartime Underwater Operators, and it's by T.J. Waldron and James Gleeson, published by Evans Brothers, London, and it seems to have been published in 1950. And I think if somebody referred to page 114, they'd find some of the details you're giving. Right, so you were training with the Canadians in April 1944, and that was your team.
That's correct.
Any incidents or anecdotes about the training period you want to recount?
Well, at that after the training period, we came to about 3 weeks before Normandy, and during that time, the team leaders and the officers from the Canadian Royal Engineer units, we had to go to Chandler's Ford, in which we went to a briefing for Overlord. This is 3 weeks before Overlord. And it was a time when Eisenhower and people like that were there, and we had our briefings on what was going to take place and so forth. And so from then on, that 3 week period, we just weren't unable to do anything or say anything or do anything. We were confined to our holiday camp in Brackelsham Bay for that 3 weeks prior to boarding the landing craft carrying ships to go to Normandy.
Do you remember anything about the briefing that you had?
No, not a lot. I mean, we were told exactly where we were going to go. Our beaches were pinpointed for us. We were given photographs of the whole beach area, and in my case, it was Juno Beach, and it was a Nan Red, my beach, and that's about all really. We were given the exact landing points, we were given photographs of the exact landing points and the houses on the beach and the exact beach area in which we were supposed to clear a gap of 600 yards.
Now, can you now take me through the D-Day operation step by step in detail as it affected you personally, in as much detail as you can recollect, please?
Very difficult after all these years, but as I said, we boarded the craft that were carrying the landing craft to the area of the beach, and we were going into Normandy at H minus one, which meant we were going in before the major invasion took place. But by the time we got to sea, there was a gale blowing, a storm blowing, and everything was terrible with the sea and so forth. But however, we got to our point which was about 7 miles off the French coast. And again, this was very early in the morning, probably about 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And I think the invasion took place around about 7. I can't really remember. But we were dropped about 7 miles out to sea, and we had to, with our landing craft, who had naval crew incidentally, with our landing craft, we had to get into our beach area and prepare to clear a gap of 600 yards. Bearing in mind our craft was loaded with about 3 or 4 ton of explosive, was controlled by naval seamen, had ASDIC gear for detecting underwater obstacles and so forth, and that was it. We went into the beach at Normandy. But as we were going into the beach of Normandy, the sea was so rough, it was gale force actually, that we landed, our own landing craft landed on one of the obstacles and had a hole knocked in it, or several holes knocked in it, in which the landing craft then sank onto the seabed, which was only about 3 or 4 feet of water at this time, but it rested on the bottom. So we were able to use our landing craft as it rested on the bottom.
How early on D-Day was this?
H minus one. It was an hour before the initial invasion took place.
What were your feelings at this time?
Didn't have any really. I felt a bit seasick, but I was never seasick like I was on the HMS Nelson. And our feelings were that we had a job to do, and we were going to get on and do it. We couldn't care less really what was happening. We eventually got under the seawall, sat under the seawall, which was the normal type of seawall, concrete seawall, and looking through the apertures where the sea used to run out, we could see German sentries on walking about on duty. We could see German soldiers getting on board transport to go somewhere or other. We knew not where. We assumed they were going out for the day or something like that. But we just sat there and waited for the invasion to take place, because we couldn't, in actual fact, put our explosive on the obstacles because the sea was too rough. We couldn't get at our explosive because it was in a sunken craft. And we just waited for the invasion, waited for the engineers to come in with their DD tanks and so forth. And then we prepared to, with them, to clear the obstacles manually. I say manually, we swam out with wires, ropes and hawsers, attached them to the armoured bulldozers which the engineers were driving. And we cleared a gap, as many gaps as we could, with mechanical means. And during that time, the invasion took place. All the landing craft were coming in, the landing craft inventory, the landing craft tank, and so forth. And it was a little bit chaotic, to say the least.
What precisely did you have to do in this manual operation?
We had to swim out to the obstacles, which were, the largest obstacles were called Element C, and they were like a big iron gate made out of about 5-inch angle iron, and they weighed about up to 8 tons apiece. And we had to attach a wire rope to those so that the bulldozers, this was underwater, so that the bulldozers, which were more or less on dry land, could pull them to one side. And there was also another object called a hedgehog, which had 4 cross pieces, so which as you hit them, one leg rolled over and hit you again and 4 times. By the way, my landing craft as we were going ashore hit the only obstacle in my beach area that didn't have a mine on it.
Did you hit the mine or not?
No, there wasn't a mine on it. It's a cross-legged piece, and that's in 4, 2 that way and 2 the other way, you know, and as you hit, it rolls over, and then the other leg comes up and goes through the bottom, and then if you keep going, the other leg comes up. Well, our legs that came through the bottom of the landing craft didn't have any shells or mines on them, but nearly every obstacle on the beach, apart from the one I hit, did have one fixed onto them. And this was one of our jobs that we did we did to pass the time really was to take off shells and mines.
How dangerous was it handling this material?
Some people say it was very dangerous, but we didn't. We just took it as a job and we just carried on doing it. We didn't think it dangerous. We'd been handling explosive and mines and shells and things all of our training periods.
But the Germans could have booby-trapped it, couldn't they?
Easily, yeah. But it's quite difficult to booby trap something under the water.
Were you working under pressure of time?
No, we were just working. We just there wasn't any time factor that we knew of, and if there was a time factor, by the fact that the sea was so rough and the weather was so bad, we wouldn't have been able to operate to a time factor anyway. We just had to clear a hole in the beach defences so that the infantry could come ashore and get through. And in our case, of course, it was the Canadians that had to come through, and which they did quite successfully.
Did you achieve the job 100%?
No. Our main job was to clear a gap of 600 yards and mark it with a red and green buoy. Because the weather was so rough and because our craft was sunk, we were unable to clear with explosive. We were unable to clear a 600-yard gap. We cleared a many hundred-yard gap. I can't tell you how many, probably the whole of the beach area, eventually by mechanical means with the Canadian engineers and the Royal Engineers.
Well, that was over a period of days.
No, we were only there. We were only there a day. We were only there a day and then we got taken off and brought back to HMS Vectis on the Isle of Wight.
I'm surprised that so much could be achieved within a few hours.
Yeah, it was surprising really. Mind you, there was quite a lot of people there.
What about the question of enemy fire?
Sniping fire mostly. It was, we were. Whilst we were working in the water, it was mostly sniper fire, but the occasional mortar fire of the mortars landing in the sea around us. But it didn't do us too much harm. Snipers were our biggest problem. German snipers in the houses above us, which were sniping all the time.
Were you at any stage frightened or worried?
Frightened to death, yeah. Frightened to death, all well, no, normally frightened, yes. I mean, but it didn't frighten us to the fact that we couldn't carry out our work. I mean, in actual fact, we made fun of a lot of things. I mean, for instance, we put a tin helmet on a stick and held it up over the seawall to see if the snipers could hit it with their bullets, which they did several times, just to see what was happening. But we enjoyed it. We didn't enjoy ourselves, but we weren't frightened to death. We carried on and did our job. We knew we had a job to do, and we were responsible to the principal beach master that was there, and I think his name was Captain Maud, if I can remember rightly. Maud, MAUD, Captain Maud.
How much did you see of him on the day?
Didn't see much of him at all, really. We saw him a couple of times because I was in charge of my team, and I had an officer in charge of a team which was adjacent to mine. His name was Lieutenant Smith, and when we did our job, we thought we'd try and find our other team by going down the beach. This was myself and two corporals. We thought we'd find our other team, so I left my team under the sea wall, and we wandered up to the beach and eventually found Captain Maud, the principal beach master, and asked him if he'd seen anything of our team, our other team, which was Lieutenant Smith and 10 men. And he said that he'd heard that they'd come into the beach area, but that was the last he saw of them. So we spent the rest of the whole 24 hours, I suppose, which we were there, looking for them. And whilst we were looking for them, we were clearing mines and shells and that type of thing, doing all our normal work which we were employed to do, but we didn't find Lieutenant Smith or the 10 men. But eventually, when we got back to the Isle of Wight, which was called, in our case, HMS Vectis. When we got back to HMS Vectis, we landed at the jetty from a landing craft, which had come from one of the parent ships, and Lieutenant Smith and his team were already there. And they'd gone into Normandy. I was Nan Red, so they must have been Nan White. They'd gone into the beach, found out that it was too rough to do any work, went full astern with his landing craft and got on board a parent ship and got back to the Isle of Wight the same day.
Any anecdotes about the work that you were doing on D-Day that stick out in your mind?
The only anecdote that I know of is that with Lieutenant Smith, his men called him Fuller Stern Smith, but that's the only general anecdote I know, really.
Did you get so absorbed in the work that you forgot about the enemy and the danger of it?
Oh yes, we didn't consider the enemy at all. We just had our job to do, and mostly that job was clearing mines and projectiles from obstacles and from under landing craft and things like that. We had several calls from skippers of landing craft tanks to clear a mine or a shell from under their ship, which we did, and we did that all as part of a job. We didn't see them. The only enemy we saw was through mortar shells, snipers, and any sort of bombs or anything that was coming down from the air or from inland. We just carried on with our normal work. We didn't think any more of it. We've been doing much that same sort of work at Westward Ho and at Appledore and Instow, because all our work was to do with explosive and blowing up things and using large explosive like depth charges to create obstacles and that type of work, and with the development of Combined Ops Experimental.
What did you think of the job that the enemy had done in protecting those beaches?
Well, by what I saw of it, I thought it was absolutely wonderful, because they had about three different rows of obstacles. The major one was the large one called Element C, which was like iron gates, and they were situated at low tide, just at low tide level, so that when the tides came in, they were covered by sea. And each one of those had a mine on, or a mine of some description, either a mine or a shell with a fuse, so that if you touched them, they'd go off. And they were about 10 to 15 yards apart, and they were staggered so that the rows were covered. And then behind that was bays of rows and rows, continuous rows of hedgehogs, three, and then stakes driven into the sand, which, so if you were landing craft hit them, the stakes would make a hole. Now that was only part of the Atlantic Wall. Originally, that Atlantic Wall was going to be, and if they'd had time to do it, they would have done, they'd have continued these bays of Element C in continuous rows. Three rows of Element C, three rows of hedgehogs, and any amount of rows of stakes. So I thought they did a very good job. Plus the fact there was the concrete sea wall when you got up the beach, which was like any normal sea wall to protect the landscape, which was massive concrete.
Were there any surprises that you found in what the Germans had done in the defence of the beaches?
No.
Had they done anything which you hadn't expected?
No. We knew everything about those beaches that we went to long before we went there. Well, as I say, we were trained on bays of Element C. We trained at Appledore to cut bays of Element C down to a 10-inch from an 8-foot high object down to a 10-inch object with explosive, and we knew all about that because the people had been to different beaches in France and odd places, and we'd got all the photographs of all the beach defences, which we had to reduce to small objects. We couldn't blow them right up, because if we blew them right up, we'd create bigger objects by making craters in the beach. We had to collapse an 8-ton, 8-foot-high bay of element sea down into a 10-inch object so the landing craft could run over it. But of course, in our case, being as the weather was so bad, we didn't have the opportunity to do all this, plus the fact our craft had holes in it and we couldn't use the explosive.
Was the beach sandy or shingly?
Sandy. Sand. It was a sandy beach. There was some shingle, but mostly sand. And it wasn't a shelving beach, it was a very gradual beach. It was ideal for landing craft, except for the obstacles.
Did you see anything of the troops going ashore?
By that you mean our troops?
Yes.
Yes, we saw it all. They were just coming in and touching down and just coming down the gangways or off of the ramps of the landing craft and just piling straight up into the above the beach area above us into what was the protected area that the Germans had mined and so forth. But then, of course, after they got over the seawall area, they disappeared from our view, really. But there was hundreds of them, Canadians and English and so forth.
What did you think of the job they were doing?
I thought they were mad. I thought they were mad because the Regiment La Chaudière, to all intents and purposes, they were coming ashore. They were straight up the beach, straight over the seawall, or through the gaps in the seawall that had been blown by the engineers and so forth, and running straight through minefields and everywhere. I thought it was chaotic. Not only from their point of view, from our point of view as well.
What did you think they should have done?
I think that, well, I thought they should have behaved like engineers or whatever they were, and checked the minefields and cleared the mines and the minefields before going through them. But they were running through them without checking them, and consequently they lost an awful lot of people.
So you think they were going too fast and incautiously?
They were just mad to get there.
How did you feel when the D-Day operation, as far as you were concerned, was over and you came back? In what kind of mood were you in?
The mood I was in was terrible. I was in a terrible mood because I'd lost the team that should have been working alongside me. We spent an awful lot of time looking for them. Not only looking for them alive, but looking for the bodies, which we didn't find. And then when we got back to the Isle of Wight, HMS Vectis, to find they were all intact, their landing craft was intact, their explosive and all their equipment was intact, and they were all intact. And we'd been frustrated enough to spend a lot of time looking for them to see what had happened.
So what did you say to them?
I didn't say anything to the officer. I was lost for words. I just made out a report that explained all the details. And the report went to Admiral Ramsay.
Did you get any explanation?
As far as I know, Lieutenant Smith had to go before the Court of Inquiry, but I didn't hear any outcome of it. Not at all. It was just put down to that he probably did the right thing because the weather was so bad and just went full of stern. It annoyed me really intensely. And I have seen him on odd occasions up until about 1950, but never had an explanation from him, not a true one. Although I do know some of his men, one of his men that lived in Appledore, which have also told me the same old story about, Fuller Stern Smith. But apart from that, nothing really.
What do you think should have been done in his case.
Well, I think he should have done the same as me. I think he should have gone ashore with the engineers and cleared a gap in the beach defences so that the landing craft could get in. Whereas the landing craft that were coming in his beach area were hitting the obstacles. Not all of them, but some of them. And we cleared most of them for him. But mechanically, we cleared it mechanically, cleared his beach.
Were there any decorations for you or your team?
Yes, three of my team got the DSM, including myself.
Was that the end of your operations for the war?
Oh no. In actual fact, real operations, you mean, we came back from the Isle of Wight and we went back to Appledore and then we trained up teams to do the Japanese held islands, Japanese beaches. We trained teams for that and we sent teams out from there, but I didn't go on those teams. Eventually I had to go to a place called Trigantle, which is opposite, which is in near Devonport in Plymouth. The reason we had to go there was the rocky cliffs and the rocky beaches were similar to the ones on Jersey. And I trained with my team to do the beaches, to invade the beaches in Jersey. And we trained, I can't remember the amount of time, but it was a few months. And then the Germans capitulated in Jersey, which saved us the trouble of going there. But whilst I was training in Trigantle or Fort Scraesden or that part of, I lost one man caught in our English beach defences through oxygen poisoning, and we had several casualties of broken arms and broken legs because of the particular terrible area in which we were training. But that was it was duplicated on Jersey, so we had to train in that manner.
And you retired from the Marines when?
I retired from the Marines in June 1961.